Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we will help you solve your computer and technology troubles. Whether you're having issues with a firewall or connecting to the internet, we have a pair of experts in the studio to help you troubleshoot. Tony Yang is the operator of Albany-based Gig Computers, which currently manages the network here at WAMC. Also in the studio is Mark Bogosian, owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham. So if you have a computer or technology question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Computers, Tony, Mark, your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, here to answer your computer and technology questions today. Are Tony Yang at Mark Bogosian. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at SUNY Albany. His company began as a hobby, quickly blossomed into one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages networks from a few computers to many hundreds, including the network for this station, WAMC. Mark is the owner and operator of Castle Mac Service in Latham, New York. 35 years of experience, Mark offers a range of Macintosh service and tech support. If you have a computer question, this is the day. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Tony and Mark, welcome back to the show.
Ray, great to be here again. Thank you for the invite.
Thanks, Ray. Good to see you both.
And you guys were here early today, so you should be ready to go.
Indeed.
All right. Before we get to the calls, this question came in much earlier today from Ralph in Guilderland. And Ralph wants to know, does changing the operating system on a Mac remove all programs as well, similar to upgrading the OS on a PC?
Not if you just do a simple upgrade. When you say change, if you're actually erasing it and reinstalling something different, like an older operating system to run older software, yes, it would. But if you just do an upgrade from one of the older to newer operating systems, even if it's a significant leap from a very old to a very new operating system, no, it won't remove any applications or files for that matter.
All right. To the phones we go, 800-348-2551. Arthur and Pauling. Arthur, you're on.
Yes. About a month ago, I bought a new PC, and I use Windows Media Player to burn music CDs, okay? When I hit Windows Media Player, a little icon showed up, burn CD. I forgot what it said, burn CD or something like that. And now I try it again, and I can't get Windows Media Player to let me load a CD onto it. It just won't work. Then I found out there are many other men who are the keepers of the flame who had the same experience. So I was wondering, first of all, what? Oh, yeah, and in the interim, Microsoft had upgraded my computer without my asking.
Yeah.
They just upgraded it. And I called Dell, who sold me the computer, and they said they did one of those remote control things. Everything is fine. Your software is perfect. We don't know what's going on. So, do you guys know anything about
this? I have a few ideas, but you go first, Tony Yang.
That's an interesting problem. It's a possibility that maybe the CD burner drive has gone bad. That's a possibility. What I suggest you do is use a different CD burner software and see if you can burn a CD.
I use an external CD burner, external drive.
Okay.
This computer came without a drive, so I bought an external drive, a Buffalo external.
USB?
Yes.
And it works on a different computer? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I had never tried on any other computer, but it does work.
Use a different. There's a software called Roxio, which I think is really good piece of software for burning CDs. Give that a try and see if that works.
You know, I think you might be onto something there, Tony. I have a feeling that but first of all, try Tony's experiment. Try putting that external burner onto a different machine and see if it'll will register. But it's possible that the software upgrade you did changed a default setting. There may be Roxio or one of those other ones on that computer that came with your HP, and all of a sudden it's now back to it wants to see the CD, and Windows Media Player is shut out. I burn a lot of CDs with Windows Media Player too, and every now and then when there's an update, something like that will happen. But I would definitely check the hardware first.
Okay, so to download, do I download Roxio separately?
Yep. Download, just do a Google search for Roxio CD burner or any other CD burner software. Install it, and that should that will hopefully get you going again. That's a good point, Ray.
And another one that you may want to try, it's a simple one, but have you left that thing plugged into the USB the entire time, like both before and after the upgrade, the software?
No, I had unplugged it.
Okay. I would at some point while the computer's powered up and the CD player's powered up, unplug it and plug it back into the USB and just watch what happens. See if you see any recognition at all of that device.
Okay. I also thought maybe that, well, when I got the CD player, the burner, it came with a CD that had the drivers on it.
Yeah.
I installed the drivers, and everything was fine. When I had my unwanted upgrade that was just given to me by Windows,
right?
Could that upgrade have screwed up the drivers?
How big of an upgrade was it?
I don't know. I mean,
did you go from Windows 7 to Windows 10 or something like that?
No. It's all within Windows 10.
Okay.
All within Windows.
I'll
10.
Bet you it could be a driver. Yeah.
It could very well be a driver. See if you can get the updated driver for your CD burner. We install that, and we install the software that it comes with. That might get you going.
Good plan, man. Well, good luck, Arthur. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian is here. He generally handles the Mac questions. Tony Yang is here. He generally handles the PC questions, but they'll mix it up every now and again. Let's go to line two and Jim in Middletown. Jim, you're on.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Very good.
Good. Excellent. That's great. You want to say question? Hello.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I've been having this problem with my Brother wireless printer. My laptop doesn't see it, even though the both of them are on the same network. I tried downloading, because I don't have a DVD drive to install the drivers. So I went on Brother's website and downloaded the whole software and driver package. And I can't finish installing it because it just doesn't recognize. It doesn't even see the printer.
Jim.
Often
when you have a wireless printer, it when you can't see it, it's usually because it's not connected to your wireless network. Or it doesn't connect to it automatically. So there's certain steps you have to go through to make sure that it is connected properly. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that it's visible on your network, because if it's not properly connected wirelessly, no matter what driver you put on there, it's never going to see it. So I will verify that first before you jump into the driver section of the problem solving.
Okay, because the printer, I use the display, and I make sure I connect. I put in the password for the Wi-Fi, and I see the emblem that it's connected, the Wi-Fi symbol,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it'll say that it's connected.
Yeah. The you want to check. So the next step you want to do is take a look at the IP address, make sure it's actually on on the same network that you do that your PC is on, and then ping that specific IP address of the printer. That would tell you whether or not you're connected. If you can ping it and
I've done that. I pinged it and it went like four tries and said 100% fail.
Yep, that means your printer somehow isn't connected to your network. So that's where your problem is. It's not the printer or the driver. It's just that it is not the two devices are not on the same network. So that's where you want to spend your time troubleshooting. You got to be able to ping that printer before it can talk to it.
How old is the printer, by the
way? Do I change the IP address or something?
You should. Here's what I would do. Set your printer back to default manufacturer settings, because what that's going to do is when you connect to the wireless network, it will pick up an IP automatically, so you don't have to change the IP, and then your PC should be able to see that. So set it back to manufacturer defaults, and then do your connection again, and then the driver. I'm thinking that that's going to get you going.
You might also try if you have
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Mark.
You have a USB cable. After you reset back to factory, if it still doesn't connect, try printing directly from a USB just to see that the printer is not malfunctioning. Right. If it's a slightly older printer, it could be failing. A board inside could be failing.
Okay. That's a good point. All right, Jim, good luck. We'll take a break here. It's the Computer Show on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Oh, remember that show, John Harrington, Steely Dan guitar player, played at the Linda, a few years now, 4 or 5 years ago. I'll remember that show. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Computers today, Mark Bogosian is here, and Tony Yang. A few emails here, and then we will go right back to the phones. This one's from Patrick in North Adams. And the subject heading, antivirus software. Patrick writes, my current virus protection is expiring. It's one of the major brands. I hate it. It slows my computer down noticeably. It's quite annoying with its own pop-ups and installing add-ons to Chrome. The computer is 3 years old and running Windows 10. Can you guys recommend an antivirus program that runs more in the background and is less intrusive?
On the corporate world front, we normally will run the Symantec Small Business Edition. For a personal computer, we find Symantec software to be the most compatible. In other words, you're going to have the least amount of problems. But they do tend to be a little bit resource intensive as well.
Back in the old days, they were resource hogs. I haven't used them in a while, so they might be better now.
They've gotten better. McAfee is less resource intensive. There are other ones out there that don't do as much. What you might want to consider doing is disable some of the functions you may not want to use. That will eliminate a lot of the resource strain on your computer.
All right, this one's from Kevin. Is there a method for transferring all files, drivers, programs from one computer to another in one fell swoop? I have a reliable computer I use daily. However, it's getting up there in age, and I feel I'm on borrowed time. If there is some prep work I can do now while it's functioning correctly, that'll help dull the pain of setting up everything I've accrued over the years onto a new computer, it may be worth exploring. You guys do this.
Well, on the Mac platform, I don't know if it is it a Mac or a PC.
Doesn't say.
On the Mac platform, there's built into every Mac is what's called the Migration Assistant, which will, once connected, allow you to transfer applications, preferences, settings, data, everything from old to new. So there's nothing you really do in preparation.
Mm.
Okay. On the PC front, there are software out there that can do that, but not as well as the Mac stuff. You certainly can try to back up your existing PC and then restore it onto your new computer.
Yeah.
That actually does work well.
You mean like with using something like Carbonite or one of those?
One of those, well, not a Carbonite, but a local backup software.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, you know, things like Backup Exec would be a good option.
Okay.
The other thing to keep in mind is Windows 10 now. Believe it or not, one of the good features about Windows 10 is it's able to run bare metal pretty well. That means if you grab the drive out of your old computer with the Windows 10 OS on it and put in a new computer, it's got a very, very good chance that it will continue running.
You are kidding me.
Yep, and it will pick up all the new drivers for you. All the softwares will stay the same. So, you know, that's certainly worth a shot.
Interesting. I did not know that. I've been pretty happy with Windows 10. It's not bad.
Windows 7 started doing some of that, but Windows 10 has gotten a lot better doing it.
All right, last email and then back to the phones. This is from Rich in New Jersey. Subject heading, slow Windows 10. I recently bought an HT laptop with Windows 10 installed running a 2.7 gig AMD processor. I can give you the processor number if you want, but I'll wait on that. I'm appalled by the lousy performance. After using the machine for a couple of weeks, it still grinds on the hard drive for ungodly amounts of time, even though I'm not doing anything. It timed out once. From a cold start, the processor was pegged at 100% or close to it for over 5 minutes, and the hard drive was grinding away constantly for 8 minutes. It does this every time it boots up. Why? What is the thing doing? What can I do about this? It doesn't seem to be installing OS updates. I don't recognize many of the processors that are hogging CPU cycles, although one was Word. I don't even use Word, and I never went through the install it requires before it can be used. That's from Rich in New Jersey. He's not happy. He's not happy.
Oh, man, oh, man. hey, Rich, listen, you are having the same issues that a lot of the people have. You know, the drive just keeps spinning after a window loads up. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
So I got a few things for you. Get an SSD drive. It's inexpensive, and it will make you run much, much faster.
In a laptop? Could you put that in a laptop?
Oh, yes. Yep. Okay. The 2.5-inch drives goes right into the laptop.
Okay.
The reason why your drive keeps spinning after Windows loads up is because Windows now, especially Windows 10, loads the basic stuff to get you into Windows, and then it takes its time to load the other things that it needs to load to make the operating system run the way that it's designed to run.
Okay.
And you might want to disable some of the stuff that's on your computer that you don't need, which may be getting loaded as well right in the beginning as you start a computer.
Yeah, I put a lot of programs to sleep, and then if I need them, it takes a couple extra seconds, and it's there.
And that helps. The other thing about drive spinning a lot is lots of times it's because you don't have enough RAM. So what happens, the operating system, when it's running out of the physical RAM that you have in your computer, it starts using your drive space as a backup. So if your drive is constantly running, that could be one of the reasons.
Okay,
as well.
It's not the processor? I can give you the processor.
Nope, that processor is perfectly fine.
It's an A12-9720P.
Yeah, the 2.7 gigahertz processor is plenty.
All right, back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Mark Bogosian and Tony Yang are here, and now it's time for Fred in Saratoga. Fred.
Hello.
Hello.
I was wondering, I have a lot of documents, photos, mostly Word documents, spreadsheets. Is it better to back up onto a portable hard drive or in the cloud? I've had hard drives fail on me in the past. I didn't know which was safer.
I'm a big proponent of using the cloud, at least on the Macintosh. Apple offers their cloud for relatively low cost per month or per year. There's no worry about failing hardware, damaged hardware, anything like that. So for pictures especially, I try to steer clients to use the cloud as much as possible. You have access from any computer anywhere you are. You don't have to have your PC or your backup drive handy to access those. So I would steer you towards the cloud for that type of storage.
Is there any one service that you recommend?
Are you using a Mac or PC?
No, PC. PC.
Tony, you might have a suggestion there.
You can Google Chrome.
Yeah, Fred, you can sign up for Google Drive. There's box.net. All these places will actually give you free, I think, 5 or 10 gigs of storage, which can store quite a bit of pictures and documents. Yeah. But I'm going to add one more thing on top of what Mark is saying. You cannot do enough backups. in my opinion. Right. So do the online, sign up for a couple of different services that are free, and then use a local drive. Believe me, you won't regret it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Is it possible to, if I plug in a portable hard drive at night, to set something so that it's just going to copy everything?
Yep, Windows has a built-in backup software that can do that for you. And if you buy an external hard drive, they often come with a backup software that you can use to schedule.
Where do I find the Windows software? I have Windows 10.
Yeah, just type in that search button, type in backup, and it will bring that up for you.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Fred.
You know, it occurs to me about these cloud-based backup storage. Obviously, there is a bit of hardware somewhere that keeps all this stuff in their hard drive.
Yeah.
You think that they're hardened against electromagnetic pulse? Because when we get nailed with that, there's going to be a lot of people who need to get their information back. So well, do you have any information on that?
I think the larger companies are worldwide. So something that might, you know, it may reside in Denver and New York and another country, another location far away.
Okay.
So I think we're protected in that sense.
They're usually in a clustered environment. So there are multiple copies of your software throughout different geographical areas. And actually, you know, it's funny because I just remember now, there was many years ago, I saw this company up north, much further up north than where we are.
Canada?
I think it's probably about a half an hour north of Plattsburgh.
Oh, okay.
I remember the company
up
there.
Close to Canada.
It's pretty close to Canada, yep. They had a service where their data vault was about seven stories below
ground. So it was an old missile silo?
I don't know what
it was. I'll bet you it was.
It was really expensive, and I'm thinking it's got to be all government customers, right? But they had this service where their data vault is, their entire data center is 7-8 stories below ground. So there are services out there like that, but I don't think that's what everybody is doing.
All right. Well, that's what keeps me up at night, the impending EMP attack. Paula in South Hadley. Paula, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen. I have very few questions, but they're very easy.
Okay.
They're very easy because I'm a novice. I have an old PC that I haven't used in at least 10 years because I've been using a Mac. And that's when I had just begun, and I have a lot of probably useless information, but some good things on it. How can I get it off there by putting in a CD or a USB port? I tried doing the USB port, but my hard drive must be not working because it just didn't do anything.
Hmm.
But would that be the way to do it, approach it first?
It sounds like you might have to take or bring it to somebody like Tony to take the drive out.
Okay.
I know on the Macs, and I wouldn't doubt on the PCs, they're using different types of connectors now. So, if you brought me a 10-year-old Mac, I happen to have the old connectors.
You can't get adapters though
to mount those. I'm not sure on the PC world if they were using IDE drives or SCSI back then.
10 years ago.
Okay.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Paula. You can't just burn this to a data CD.
Put a CD in. My Windows is. Tell me what I should do.
Yeah.
I'll tell you if
you
I
know,
get it right.
You know, Ray, 10 years ago, a lot of PCs didn't have a CD burner in it.
Oh, okay.
So,
but do you have a CD in there, Paula?
There is a CD case in there. There is a CD
probably
drive
just
that comes out.
Probably just the reader.
Okay.
USB drive. Okay. If you got a USB port on that old computer, that's the best way to go. Plug in a USB drive and start copying things over. Otherwise, you may have to go the route that Mark is suggesting, which is to bring it over to a shop, local shop, and have them copy it for you. But you can definitely get the data off it.
I mean, is it still working, Paula?
Yes, I just haven't used it in over 10 years because I've been using the Mac now, and it was when my daughter was first born, and I put a lot of information on there, and so I wanted to get that off, and I also wanted to ask, if I bring it to someone to have it transferred, will they dispose of it for me? I'm worried about, you know, the information on it.
Yep, that's most companies would have at least, you know, some basic knowledge of how to wipe the drive enough so that you don't have to worry about that. It doesn't take much.
Okay.
What we normally do, okay, if a client asks us to do it, we basically physically open that drive out, take the platter out of there.
Scratch
just,
it.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
All right. Yeah.
All right, Paula. Okay. Well, good luck. Right. If the computer's working, you should be able to pull it off. I mean, it should work for you. All right, she's done. All right, let's go to Marion and Wendell. Hello, Marion. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I spent all morning trying to set up a printer for another brother. And I get to the point where you plug it in and you turn it on. But you can't turn it on. You have to set the date. And so I got 2019 on there and I press okay. And then it doesn't do anything. And then if you try to power it up, it says, I'm busy. That's the message.
Ugh.
So I can't get past the date.
Yeah.
Enter the date and then press OK. And then you're supposed to, probably it wants to put the time in, but it doesn't even go to that. It doesn't go beyond 2019.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Sounds like you might have
it
to bring.
It won't recognize the, you know, I push OK, but nothing happens then.
Sounds like it's DOA, dead on arrival.
So what could that be?
Send it back.
What could be causing that?
It's probably the firmware chip on it is defective and something isn't processing properly. It happens. Happens rarely, but it does happen.
Yeah, if it's brand new, I wouldn't get frustrated anymore. I'd bring it back or send it back to...
it's brand new. I gave it to him for Christmas, and he didn't even open it, so I just tried to set it up for him.
It does happen once in a while. I mean, the manufacturers are pretty good about screening and testing and putting things out that work first time and for a period. But every once in a while, we do see hardware that comes out of the box failing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Try, you know, if there are instructions on there to do a manufacturer reset, try that. I mean, it's brand new, so you shouldn't have to do
right.
it. But it might be worth a shot.
Do what?
A full reset. There might be instructions with the piece of gear that says this is how you reset it to factory.
Okay.
Yeah, try that. Other than that, bring it back and swap it out for another printer. It sounds like a defective printer to me, too.
Yeah, okay. All right.
All right, best of luck.
Okay.
Thanks, Marion. 800-348-2551 is the number to call. Mark Bogosian is here. Mark is owner and operator of Castle Max Service in Latham, New York. Tony Yang is here. Tony is the founder and operator of Gig Computers in Albany. And now we go over to Meg in Poughkeepsie. Hi, Meg, you're on.
Hey, guys. So my question is, I'm a school teacher, and my district blocked out certain websites. Over the summer, I turned in my computer, and I got it back, and I couldn't go to some things that I used to do for teaching purposes. I mean, I understand the point of locking out certain websites because the children are using the computers
right.
as well, but the teachers should have some modicum of, say in what I use and show in my classes. So I used to have a workaround because there was something blocking certain sites, and I used UltraSurf. Now, UltraSurf doesn't work anymore, and I would just wonder if... there's any suggestion on what I could use to, I mean, my preference is to use Chrome, but I could use other web browsers as well. But I just want to get to social media sites because I think a lot can be learned from Twitter and even Instagram and showing certain things. So what I end up doing is taking screenshots of some things. Oddly enough, I can get to YouTube where you can see all sorts of weird things, including the ads alone or... objectionable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, do you have any suggestions for how I could do a workaround?
Meg, are you referring to when you're using this computer at the school, like when you're in your classroom? Mm-hmm. Okay,
I can see whatever I want.
Right. So changing a browser isn't going to make a difference
because the firewall at school.
Their firewall and the proxy server is filtering. They're filtering all of these.
Can she set up a VPN?
I was just getting there. Now, VPN will only work if you have a proxy server on top of it, in this case.
Huh.
So it's it's not going to be a simple setup, but yes, there are ways around it. One of those will be a proxy server that somebody is willing to let you use, and you know, many of these services, VPN services, will offer that to you.
I mean, it's incumbent upon me, and this is a direct word from our legal department, to say that we're really not condoning you doing this at school, but we understand your point, and you take responsibility for that one, Meg.
Thank you. Maybe I should have used a fake name.
You know what? Maybe it is a fake name. Maybe you're not even in Poughkeepsie, for all we know. All right, so I guess VPN might be a way, but you got to have a proxy server underneath.
You got to have a proxy
server
underneath.
Okay, got it. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right, Meg, thanks a lot. Let's take a break here now that we've aided and abetted. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's computers. We'll get back to the home stretch in a moment. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Numbers 800-348-2551. Tony Yang and Mark Boghossian are here, and they're here to answer your computer questions. Two emails, and then, oh boy, the lines are loaded. We'll move as quickly as we can. This one's from Todd. Todd writes, I have a year-old Dell Inspiron laptop. I don't have any programs installed other than what came with the computer. I keep getting an error that says, cannot install updates. You need to make room, or something like that. I've remoted everything I feel safe doing, but I keep getting this error. Can you tell me or tell me where I can get a list of programs I can safely remove to get more storage? That is from Todd.
Wow. A new computer that you haven't installed anything, and it's giving you...
It's a year old.
Yeah. Well, the add or remove program in the control panel, that's the safest place. If you can click on it and uninstall it, that's usually the best way to go.
Do you suppose there's a vast amount of... stuff in the recycle bin or software bits that have already been installed that are just need to be cleared?
You know, Dell preloads quite a bit of stuff, but not enough where it's going to jam up the entire drive. So there's got to be something else going on. Clean up, like you say.
Cleaner might work. That's a free program, right?
There's a bunch of other ones out there. There's a Clean Sweep. Lots of other things. But I would look into what Ray just said about your recycling bin and see if that needs to be emptied out.
I wonder, though, could this be a RAM failure?
Usually not a RAM issue if you're having that kind of message. That's usually indicative of space running out on your hard drive.
All right. This one is from Peter, who writes, guys, I hit a speed bump somehow, and now I'm an idiot savant. What devices and services do I currently need to fully connect with the internet in a fiscally thrifty manner? Would like to be able to Skype with family, stream movies, without becoming a target for a billion ads. Right now, all I have is an old Dell laptop with a wire to net zero via the phone line and an older 4G iPhone with AT&T. I don't even have broadcast TV, let alone cable. So in lieu of streaming, it's only been Netflix DVDs via mail.
Yeah, wow.
That's old school, Peter.
Yeah. Mark, it's all you. That's all you. No,
just kidding. One of those turnstiles with a bunch of squirrels.
You know, that's not helpful.
That's a tough situation. When you don't have cable out there, satellite is going to be your next best shot.
Has that improved? In the old days, satellite was not a very good way to get...
Yeah, it still isn't. I mean, you're going to get maybe 3-4 megs, and it's not going to be great. The upload is going to be terrible, so you can't Skype on that. Mm. However, I got a bit of good news for you, and that is companies like Google are putting up their own satellites. Tesla is also doing it.
Really?
They're putting up a satellite internet system up. Now, I don't know how much it's going to charge or it's going to be free for everybody, but they are in the midst of doing it. They just deploy a bunch of satellites.
What frequencies will they be using?
We have no idea.
This is fascinating.
But it is going to be supposed to be it's supposed to rival the landline speeds.
Wow.
So that could be your best shot. I'm sorry, buddy. Net zero. Oh my goodness.
Well, you know, it's something.
Yeah, it's something. But boy, I haven't heard that for a while.
Yeah. Okay. Well, sorry about that one, Peter. All right, back to the phones we go. Mark Boghossian is here. Tony Yang is here. And Dennis is in Colony. Dennis.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have a desktop PC, and I have been attempting to back up my computer with an external hard drive. It's a relatively new Toshiba, and the software I'm using is an ArcSoft backup program. My problem is when I plug in the external hard drive, I immediately get this, I guess I'd call it a burping sound from the computer or the hard drive, kind of a ding-dong, ding-dong thing, and I can hear the clicking in the hard drive. It's not a solid-state hard drive. Mm. So I can't get it to settle down where I can actually perform an external backup. Do you have any idea what might be going on here?
If your drive is clicking...
Yeah, they're not supposed to click.
Yeah. That usually means the drive head, the head that's reading the data off your platter, isn't settling in properly. So it's trying to get back and park itself, but it can't. So it's just constantly struggling, and that's why you hear that sound that sounds like a clicking sound. But it's
fixable?
Really... virtually impossible. I would get a new drive.
Oh,
not
no.
Worth spending the time right. Fixing. That's a complicated process.
Well, can he get his data off the drive?
You may be able to.
Yeah, it could be costly, though. You probably have to use a service that will take out the platter and
It sounds to me like he's trying to back it up into the external drive, and the external drive is the thing that's not working. So I'm thinking you just get a new external drive.
Yeah.
But if...
Okay, now...
Go ahead, Dennis.
Let me add this wrinkle to it. I had another external hard drive about a year ago and developed this same problem. And I just assumed, I said, well, this hard drive has obviously gone bad. Mm. It shouldn't be doing this. So I bought a new hard drive, this Toshiba hard drive. It's got plenty of space on it. It's like a terabyte. And the first couple of backups went fine. And now all of a sudden, here I am back to where I was with this burping, clicking sound on the hard drive. You think it's definitely a hardware problem?
Yeah, normally if you hear a click like that, that is a very, very clear indication of a drive head that's just not parking itself.
All right. And I've never seen the computer create that problem. It's always either... wear and tear, manufacture defect, physical damage, things like that. So I would question whether it has anything to do with your PC directly.
Well, it could be environmental. Maybe he's right next to the ocean, or there's a lot of dust, or you're in a smokestack. I don't know. Is there something like that going on?
No, I can't say there is.
Wow.
And actually, I've got this thing. I had, when I originally bought it, I set it up to back up on the first of every month at 8 p.m. And I wouldn't plug it in until the first of the month. So then I would unplug it after the backup.
Yeah.
And as I say, the first couple went fine. But now it just will not do that anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sounds like bad luck more than anything.
So a coincidence, huh?
Probably. Hey, Dennis, try a Western Digital external hard drive instead.
Oh, yeah? You think so?
Yeah.
Well, Dennis, good luck. I don't know. I don't believe in coincidences that often, though. I mean, it seems like there's got to be some reason that two of them did the same thing.
Yeah, it's a little unusual.
Yeah.
Unless you bought the same exact brand and model of hard drive.
No, I didn't do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your help anyhow. Great show, fellas.
Thanks a lot. Over to Cynthia in Leverett, Mass. Cynthia.
Oh, good. Thank you for taking my call. I have email problems. I end up being locked out of my accounts. First one, I have three accounts. One's mine, one's my husband's, and then one's a business account. I'm locked out first one, then another, and then everything's gone. And that's often first on the computer, maybe a day later on other electronic devices. I have a local server. I've been with them for years since the start. I know their idiosyncrasies, and yet they say they have problems with Mac mail. And to make it worse, they say that no one really has the problem I have. I've run their malware program looking for viruses. I've upgraded the operating system to 10.14.2 on both computers. I go to preferences and server settings. The incoming mail has my email and password, and I've set it for outgoing as well. However, when I go to check on the server settings again, all of a sudden, for outgoing, it has my husband's email and his password. I change the settings. Sometimes I'm locked out again. Sometimes it works. But why does it flip like that? And why do you think I'm having such problems?
When you say locked out, meaning even with your password, your correct credentials, you can't get in. Do they have webmail? Do they have any other way to get in?
Yeah, I can sometimes get in through webmail, but even a few times I've been locked out of that. And it's, okay, as I said, it's a local server, and they don't work on weekends, although sometimes they will do it for me.
Well,
it's just very bizarre.
The Mac Mail definitely does have issues with some servers, and more so with the more recent operating systems. For instance, I've seen problems with NICAP or Time Warner's Roadrunner servers when we upgrade to the newer operating systems and therefore the newer Mac Mail. So there will be some idiosyncrasies there, but not to the extent that it would change or lock you out of your account. With all due respect to the local server, I've seen those problems with other local servers. And I'm not trying to disrespect them, but I would suggest when you get locked out to that degree, that is beyond the Mac Mail client, beyond that software, it's something on the server end, not necessarily your end. Now, it could be something between the Mac operating system that is sending erroneous signals or something to the server, and their built-in software is putting a freeze on it, a lock on it for security purposes or something like that. But I would suggest your problems are more with the local server more than the computer itself. If you the server settings I could see would be disrupted by the Mac Mail and compatibility, but for it to lock you like that, I think it's something on the server end rather than the computer side.
Yeah, I've been looking into different servers as much as I like to go local.
Yeah,
but it's frustrating.
Yeah, they may not have the resources, or it may just be a compatibility thing. Again, something might be triggering it from your computer, not necessarily that something's wrong with your workstation, but something in the Mac software that's triggering it. Doesn't make it your fault. It's something that the server just can't handle for some reason. And problems
With different servers going to the IMAP? Because these all of mine are the POP.
Right.
Would that make a difference?
Well, it might. I mean, that's more a matter of how you can access the mail from and how it's managed in terms of incoming and deleting things like that. I don't know that that's the solution, but it's probably something an inefficiency or a problem in the server side more than anything.
All right, Cynthia, thank you very much for that one. And let's go to Tony in Amherst. Tony, you're on.
Hi. I'm an almost brand new iMac, and I'm using Microsoft for Office 360 software. This is running terribly slow, and I wonder if there's some issue of compatibility between this Office 360 and this iMac.
And is it slow just when you launch Word, Excel, or PowerPoint, or is it slow when you run the computer with other applications?
It mostly seems related to the software, to the Office.
And you
software.
Say the computer's relatively new. Did you migrate from an old computer to the new computer? That is, migrate files and things like that? Okay. And did you have an older version of Office on that?
Yes.
Okay. So I've seen cases exactly like this where there could be some conflicts, not necessarily from the old Microsoft, but some other preferences or conflicts in the old software that got migrated over, the old preferences. So sometimes it's a needle in a haystack. Sometimes it's a matter of backing up and redoing the hard drive. But if it only happens with Office, I would suggest it has something to do with the old Office that was on there. There's no uninstall. it is something that if I, you know, if I had an opportunity, I could probably fish through and find preferences and things like that to remove and then reinstall the Office 365. I guess short term, you could try reinstalling the Office 365. If you still have the download disk image, otherwise just log back on, re-download it, and try reinstalling it. If that doesn't work, then we'd have to go to the next level and fish around a little bit and make sure we remove any old Office preferences from the original version that was on there.
All right, Tony, thanks so much. Over to Patrick in East Windham, New York. Patrick, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I do a lot of writing, and I have a hand tremor, and it's very difficult for me to type on a keyboard. It's a real chore. On my smartphone, on top of the keyboard, all I have to do is type in a couple of characters, and it gives me a selection of words to tap on. What I'm looking for, I mean, do you understand what I'm talking about there?
Sure.
Yes.
On a smartphone?
Yes.
Okay, I can type in like P-N-E-U and pneumonia will come up, and I can tap on that, and it will spell the word for me. I'm looking for a program like that that I can put on my PC.
Okay, like an autocomplete, something like that.
Right, yeah, that's what he's talking
right.
about.
Right, exactly.
So, Patrick, autocomplete are program-specific, not computer-specific.
Right. So is there a program, though, that Patrick can get that would offer him fairly intuitive auto?
PC,
right.
The same, right.
Yeah.
You got it.
So the if you're using software like Microsoft Word, Word has that, it's got the Word prediction built into it. So you can use autocomplete in certain applications. Maybe not all of them, but on the most common.
Well, I have Windows 10, and in that is Office.
Right. Within Office, you're in luck because Office has the autocomplete built into it, and you just have to turn it on.
Okay.
May I also suggest looking into Dragon Speech.
So this is a transcriber of your voice.
Right. Dragon Speech could be a very, very useful thing for you, Patrick, because it has excellent accuracy when it comes to translating.
In the old days, those programs were not good.
They were not good. But these days, they're good enough to be used for medical dictation.
Wow.
So, Patrick, that could be something that will be real useful for you. And it's a cheap piece of software that you can get. You don't have to pay subscription on it or anything. And that does the commands and the writing for you.
Okay.
Something to look into.
Well, Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. And I guess that's where we will have to leave it today. Mark Bogosian, how do people find out about Castle Mac service?
CastleComp.com on the web or mark@castlecomp.com.
Well, thank you, sir, for being here. Tony Yang of Gig Computers, how do they find you?
You can hit www.gigsystems.com.
You guys did great work today, and we will do it again soon. Support comes from George Heigel Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management appraisals and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Vermont Coffee Company, organic coffee in the brown paper bag, available at local grocers. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Thanks again to Tony Yang of Gig Computers and Mark Bogosian of Castle Mac Service for being here today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, as always. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, meteorologist Jason Goff will be in the studio to answer your weather questions. We've had quite a fluctuation of temperatures here lately, from 10 below to about 52. So Jason Goff might be able to unpack all of that for us. Right now, stand by for news.